We featured Israel in many episodes of Cut the Clutter. Now we look at another country which is bordering Israel and has many similarities, has much to share in terms of some ethnicity and a lot of history. That is the country called Jordan, also about the same size of population as Israel now, about a crore or 10 million people. Again, a lot of refugees. Israel has its West Bank issue, which is not really Israel, but it has a large refugee population and Israel doesn't let go. Similarly, Jordan has a large Palestinian population, the same ethnic stock as in the West Bank, and also now has a large number of Syrian refugees. That's a million plus. That's about 10% of Jordan's population would be Syrian refugees now, as there are Palestinian refugees. So that mixed up, complicated, fascinating country, which is located in probably the most geostrategic location in the world, followed by Pakistan. Pakistan likes to believe that they have a very crucial geostrategic location. It is true, they are in a good place, a good real estate. In fact, if you look at the map of Pakistan, they are between India, China, Central Asia, Iran, and the Arabian Sea. So very important, but many of these are regional powers. Look at the Middle East. Middle East is the global playground for energy, for strategic interests, and many other things, including the Islamic world. So Jordan straddles the universe between Iraq, Syria, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, right? So it borders all these crucial countries. So once again, Syria, Iraq, Israel, Saudi Arabia, and also a little bit of it opens out in the Gulf of Aqaba into the Red Sea. Just about 26 or 25 kilometers of Jordan is a coastline, and that is again where it faces Israel. It faces, in fact, the Israeli coastal city of Eilat. So this is the crucially located country. What has happened there is something that I'm sure you know by now, that there was apparently some kind of instability, and the current ruler, the current monarch, who's King Abdullah II. Now, as we talk about Jordanian rulers and some others, you will find many of the names will feature again and again, and some will be one and two. So, which reminds me of, they are not quite as many as P.G. O'Rourke said about France. When he said they had so many kings called Louis, they had to number them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it doesn't go up to in double figures, but this is King Abdullah II. So you will find many of these names featuring again and again. Now, Jordan has a fascinating history in terms of how it came into being, because it's an ancient territory, it's an ancient civilization, it's a cradle of civilizations, but as a nation state, it's exactly 100 years old right now. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Right now, what has happened at this point? So King Abdullah II is the ruler now. Now, Jordan has a constitution, it has an elected parliament, so it has many pretensions of a democracy, but the monarch is supreme. Monarch is an executive monarch. Criticism of the monarch, of the royal, of the royal family or the ruler is a very severe crime. So King Abdullah, and you see his wife Queen Rania, who's very popular and very familiar at the global conference circuit, World Economic Forum. She's the ambassador for many global causes. These are very well educated, rich young people who've been through Ivy League universities and the best training. And the fact that Prince Abdullah, as when he was a prince, was one of the sons of King Hussein of Jordan, who ruled for almost 50 years. That didn't hurt. At the age of 37, when he became the monarch, when he succeeded his ailing father, he was already a major general in the Jordanian army at the age of 37. So what's now happened is that when he saw this instability, Jordan has seen some economic tension this year. It's the pandemic year, jobs have not been rising, a lot of young people have been protesting, and there are lots of rumblings there. So the other prince, another prince, and I will give you a little bit of that complex situation, that other prince, Prince Hamza, it looked like was being critical of the current administration, or the current ruler thought that Prince Hamza was instigating or encouraging some criticism of him, and that something, some kind of a palace revolt was building up. This is an extended large royal family. Now there is a complication there. Prince Hamza is younger than Prince Abdullah, but he was the favorite for a long time of King Hussein, their father. King Hussein for a long time called him the delight of my eye, and it was evident to a lot of people that he was the favorite among his children. But you know what happened in 1999? King Hussein fell really sick. He had had cancer. He had a kind of complicated cancer for which he had been through treatment earlier also, but this treatment had been long. He went through 6 rounds of chemotherapy at Mayo Clinic in America. By the time he came back, he had apparently begun to think of mortality because he had already ruled for about 50 years. So he thought of succession. Now, since 1965, so I'm taking you right back to 1965, that is 56 years back. In 1965, because there was a history of assassinations around the Jordanian royal family, and because there were threats at that point also of assassinations, so just to cover him for himself and for his legacy and for his dynasty, his own children were very small, then King Hussein named Prince Hassan bin Talal as his crown prince. So from then on, for 34 years, Prince Hassan bin Talal was the crown prince. He was a very well-known figure all over the world, including in the region. I also had the pleasure of being hosted by him at one of these Track 2 India-Pakistan dialogues, which was hosted in Jordan by him, in Amman by him. He was also married to a woman, a brilliant woman of Pakistani origin, Princess Sarwar. Now he, when it came to the crunch, then the king went back on his promise to his brother and suddenly said by decree that my brother is not the crown prince. In fact, he got his brother himself to issue a decree that he wasn't the crown prince, and everybody expected then that King Hamza will be the successor after Prince Hassan. But now that Prince Hassan was out, the king named his oldest son, that is the current King Abdullah, as the ruler. Current King Abdullah was born in 1962. So in 1999, when it happened, he was 37 years old. He's been the king since then. Now, when this happened, the king's wife then, and I will tell you about his 4 wives, this was the 4th, Queen Noor. So his wife then, that is Queen Noor, who was born Liza Halabi, as an American Syrian extraction, but born in America, she was called Queen Noor. She thought that Hamza, who was one of her 4 children, will be the successor. And apparently that was the promise exchanged between her and King Hussein. But at the last moment, when King Hussein changed his mind and chose his oldest son instead and got his brother out of the way, evicted his brother, then the queen got a promise and the king made a promise to her and to Hamza, his other son, that he will now be the crown prince. And he got a commitment from King Abdullah, who he was naming as a successor, that his half-brother Prince Hamza will continue to be the crown prince. And that is what happened. And once again, you know, sons always have greater charm on fathers than their brothers. At least in this case, you could see it happen again and again. A second time in 2004, as he had consolidated his position, King Abdullah II removed Prince Hamza as the crown prince and named his own son, who is Prince Hussein. So Prince Hussein II, you can call him. That's why I said they keep coming back. Prince Hussein II as the crown prince. So Hussein then became the crown prince. Prince Hussein was only born in 1994. So 1999, when his father became the king, he was just 5. By 2004, he was a grown-up 10-year-old adult, good enough to be crown prince and king. So he was named crown prince, and Prince Hamza was then left out in the cold. So you can imagine that Prince Hamza has been nursing a sense of hurt and grievance till that, since then. So now the story came out earlier this week that Prince Hamza had been put under house arrest or his movements had been restrained, and also many people close to him had been arrested, including a member, a senior member of the palace. In fact, this person used to be the head of the palace staff under King Abdullah himself. And when this happened, then Prince Hamza, who could not speak very much, could not speak out very much because there were restraints on him, he put out a couple of videos in Arabic and in English to the world in general. His lawyer leaked or released these videos, and these videos said that I have been put under restraint. I have been told that I cannot tweet, I cannot speak, I cannot go out and meet anybody, I can only meet my family. This is not an existence I like. And then he goes on to talk about corruption, and he goes on to talk about the plight of the people that the current government is not bothering about, and how they are trying to find him as a scapegoat. So before I go further, so you understand who all these princes, etc. are, I will just tell you briefly the current situation with this ruling family in Jordan. So this ruling family descends from King Abdullah I, King Abdullah, who came from the Hashemite family of Saudi Arabia, traces its descent from the Holy Prophet. So his father was the sheriff of Makkah. Prince Abdullah or King Abdullah descended from there and became the first emir in 1921 of what was called as Transjordan then, which later became Jordan. He ruled for a long time. He was assassinated in 1951. Why? Because in 1946, Jordan became independent. It was still called Transjordan. Why? Because this was the territory across the Jordan River from what could be Palestine or Israel. So this was called Transjordan. In 1946, he got independence from the British. In 1948, when the trouble started in Israel and the Jews began coming in, establishing the state of Israel, 1947-48, then Jordan also got involved. And Jordan went ahead and then captured the West Bank Palestinian territories and subsequently annexed them, saying that these are our territories, these are a part of our country. And that's when Transjordan ceased to be Transjordan, because we said we've taken over Jordanian territory on this side of Jordan River also, so why should we be Transjordan? So they became Jordan. It so happened that is when Western powers all got into play, and they began working on the rulers of Jordan, because they did not want that enmity between Jordan and Israel to continue forever. When that happened, King Abdullah was assassinated by a Palestinian militant in the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the famous Muslim mosque in Jerusalem, in East Jerusalem. He was assassinated because this Palestinian militant thought that he was making secret deals with the Israelis. So King Abdullah died. After him, immediately, Prince Talal, who was the son of King Abdullah, he became the king, because he was the crown prince. He became the prince, the king, but he didn't last very long. He got sick very soon and then handed over to Prince Hussein, who became then King Hussein. So King Hussein took over in 52, but before he faded away, he had done Jordan one favor. He had brought in a new constitution in Jordan. So King Hussein now took over under this constitution, and he ruled for almost 50 years, and he became a very, very familiar global figure, a statesman, a warrior, also somebody who could play the intrigues of the Middle East better than most other people. So he survived many threats to his life, to his regime, and he also not just survived but thrived from much other trouble in the Middle East, from the 1956-58 conflicts involving the Europeans to the 1967 Six-Day War, to the 1973 Yom Kippur War, later issues in Lebanon, and then the Gulf War, the two Gulf Wars in Iraq, where the Americans fought and Jordan, for all practical purposes, was an ally. So he knew the art of playing all sides at the same time. So he married four times in his life. So his wives were Dina, she was the first, she had one child. Then Antoine Lee Gardner, she had, with her, he had four children. Then he had Alia Toucan, from whom he had three. Now, Antoinette Lee Gardner, also called Tony Lee Gardner. Tony Lee Gardner, his second wife, was a British woman who then took an Arab name. And her Arab name made her Queen Muna. So she became Muna al-Hussein. They got divorced in 1971. But remember, she had produced four children, the oldest of whom was Prince Abdullah, who is now the current reigning monarch. So even though Queen Muna got divorced, she kept her rights as and titles as a member of the royal family, and her son succeeded King Hussein, not the favorite son from the wife who was currently with him in 1999. So the third wife was Alia Toucan. She produced three children, and finally was Lissa Halabi or Queen Noor, who produced Hamza plus three other children. So in all, the king had 12 children from four wives. So many claimants to his throne, but his brother was the crown prince, but he diddled his brother at the last moment, gave it to the son that he wanted to give it to, his oldest son. And that has left a lot of dissatisfied people and a lot of impatient people in Jordan in his way. Now we have to also understand where Jordan came from, because 100 years back there was no Jordan or Transjordan. These were territories. Now sometimes you might have seen, when I talk about problems in the Middle East, I talk about straight line countries. Now if you see the map of the Middle East, you will see some countries have straight line borders. Look at Saudi Arabia and Jordan, for example, borders with Syria, Iraq. Many of these borders look like somebody has just taken a ruler and drawn a straight line. Who does these things? In fact, the British and the French have done these things because they were the two contending powers in the Middle East. And as the British and the French did for nearly 200 years, they fought their wars, they took territory from each other, then they gave it back, sometimes they divided up. This came up when we talked about Pondicherry, because so many times the British defeated the French in Pondicherry. When they were fighting the French in Europe, they also fought the French in Pondicherry. Then they captured Pondicherry, but then they had peace in Europe, they gave Pondicherry back or Puducherry back to France. So some of the same stuff was happening in the Middle East. So I will just tell you very precisely what happened. In 1916, until 1916, Ottomans controlled this entire region. In 1916, the Ottomans came under a shade because First World War was on, and that is when the Arab revolt started. And the Arab revolt started in 1916 by the three sons of Sharif of Makkah, Sharif Hussein of Makkah. These three sons were Abdullah, Faisal and Ali. Abdullah later became the king of Jordan or Transjordan and then Jordan. Now Faisal among these was again seen the son most likely to be set or to be destined for bigger things. So Faisal led this conflict or this revolt, and this revolt went on. They were called the Hashemite family of Hejaz and descendants of the Prophet. They launched the campaign for Arab revolt on January 5, 2016 from Medina. Then at the Battle of Aqaba, nobody expected them to win the Battle of Aqaba, but they came to Aqaba. In that battle, they defeated the Turkish army. That was a surprise, and suddenly the family of the Hashemites now had a lot of territory. And then they kept pushing. This is when, you remember the legend of Lawrence of Arabia, Lieutenant Colonel T.E. Lawrence. He was involved earlier as a British intelligence officer, but then as a sympathizer of the Arab revolt, and he in many ways helped the Arab revolt and also fought in many of the battles. You might know, you might visualize this from pictures of Peter O'Toole playing that role in the film Lawrence of Arabia. So at Aqaba, Ottomans were defeated and Hashemites then began building some kind of a kingdom of their own. Ultimately, they pushed, and they captured most of the territory of what is now Syria. They were held by the British. They captured most of the territory of Syria, went right up to Aleppo, and then declared a kingdom of their own, the Hashemite kingdom of Greater Syria. But it didn't last very long. Faisal became the head of this kingdom. He became the monarch of his kingdom. But it didn't last very long because the French didn't like it. So the French came and French attacked Damascus, and the French took over Damascus and defeated Faisal. So that kingdom ended. But once again, the British came in. So the Sykes-Picot Agreement, that in 1916 basically enabled France and Britain to decide their areas of influence in what is the Middle East now. In 1917, Balfour Declaration promised Palestinian territory to the Jews, and that is something that caused a complication. Because now, if these Arabs lost their state or their kingdom because the French took over Damascus, then what would the Arabs do? And if Arabs were unhappy, particularly this side of Jordan River, then how would Europe keep its promise of Israel or a Jewish state in Palestine? So again, to make the Arabs or the Hashemites happy, they were promised a kingdom or a state of their own. So this was a typical European superpower practice at that time, that whoever is crying, put a morsel in his mouth. Tu ro raha hai, tu bhi kuch le ja. Tu ro raha hai, tu bhi kuch le ja. So because they didn't want the Hashemites crying, and they had power in the region, so they promised them an area of their own, and that is how the kingdom of the Emirate of Transjordan came in, whose first Emir was Abdullah. Amir Abdullah later became King Abdullah. So 11 April 1921, the Emirate of Transjordan came in. That's why they say this country is about 100 years old, and it's because they were making countries like this. You want this, we'll give you this. You want this, we'll give you this. That's how these straight lines were drawn, mostly between the French and the British. Now we know much else that happened after that. We know that in 1967, King Hussein decided to fight the war against Israel very devastatingly for himself, because he lost all the West Bank territories. In 1988, later, he gave up his claims on West Bank territories, and Transjordan again became Transjordan, although it didn't change its name once again. And then he made his peace with Israel in 1994. But even before that, during 1973, Yom Kippur War, he did not join in the fighting, at least not from the territory of Jordan. But as a pretense, he sent a brigade of Jordanian army to help the Syrians. How much they could help the Syrians, I don't know, because Syrians did quite poorly in that war and lost Golan Heights. So he kept his peace and he kept his deal with the Israelis. In fact, for a long time, even when I first went to the region as a journalist, I figured that the way to go for an Indian to Jerusalem without visiting Israel or without even having an Israeli passport was to go to Amman, get a permit from the Amman, from the Jordanian Interior Ministry, to travel to East Jerusalem, so you could go up to East Jerusalem. Of course, we had our Israeli visas then on sheets of paper, which were not on the passport, because if you had Israeli visas on the passport, those days no Arab country would allow you entry. So you carried your Israeli visa, you took your Jordanian Interior Ministry permit to go into Jerusalem and come back, you crossed the Allenby Bridge, went to the other side, and you could take a flight out of Israel and go any place. So that is how these two countries have worked closely together. And that is why Jordan is so important to the Western world and to the rest of the world, because Jordan has been the most stable of the Islamic nations. It's also among the most liberal Islamic nations. In fact, on all the rankings, including Freedom House, it's among the highest ranking Muslim countries in the world in terms of individual freedom and political freedoms. Also, it's a country that the Saudis, the Syrians, the Iraqis, the Israelis, the Americans, the Brits, everybody counts on for keeping stability in the region. It's the foothold that nobody wants to get wobbly. And that's why everybody is worried, and that's why Biden administration was so quick to express solidarity with King Abdullah.